Great. Okay, so accepting what is. Accepting what is. During the month of August, our focus is on a world that works for everyone through love, caring, and compassion. And today we're going to take a look at this idea of accepting what is. We, in our teaching, embrace God, the idea, the presence of God, as that self-givingness of creation that moves through each of us and expresses as love, caring, and compassion. We acknowledge that as we allow this to express through us, that we that our intention becomes to support and aid everyone that we can who is in need of our compassion, love, and caring. So accepting what is raises a question for us. Are we talking about accepting what is at the human level, just what we see around us, what we're experiencing around us, or are we talking about accepting what is at the spiritual level, looking at the sublime truth, the reality of our experience? Well, yes. Yes to both. They both work hand in hand. Because we're not only human and we're not only spirit, we're having a spiritual, we're spiritual beings, we're having a spiritual, also known as a human experience. But since we know that God is everywhere present, God is in the human part of our experience also. So when we accept that we're having a human experience, we're going through a human experience, it allows us to see ourselves, it allows us to see others with compassion, with love, with caring, releasing any judgment. We've heard the words, what you resist persists. Well, if we're resisting the human experience, if we're resisting even what we're seeing that others are going through, we're keeping our good away from us because we're continuing to perpetuate what we're resisting. Only accepting the possibilities of compassion and allowing the experiences to flow through us do we have any opportunity for moving forward in our lives. And then, on the other hand, there's accepting the spiritual truth of our experiences, because underlying every human condition or experience is the ultimate truth, of who we or that person is. So from the spiritual perspective, we have to come to the understanding, the realization, that there is a power for good in the universe. This power for good is greater than we are, and it's encompassing every part of our human experience, because God is everywhere present all the time. And as we learn to look for that, as Zach's reading from the Science of Mind textbook mentioned, as we learn to look for that God presence everywhere, we begin to find it. We begin to see the activity of good in our experiences. So, when we accept our human experiences while still looking from the spiritual perspective, we get to let go of our fear that we're going to get stuck in that human experience. That's what happens when we're going through a human experience of illness or pain. We think we're going to get stuck there. We're never going to move past it. That's when we need to accept it, accept that it's just a wave that's moving through us. It is not going to stay with us forever. So we can just relax without resistance. So we have this conundrum, this dilemma of accepting the human condition just as it is. We don't want to do what's called a spiritual bypass, where we try to bypass all of our feelings and say, oh, this isn't happening and I'm not here. It is happening. We are here. But it's not permanent. It's transitory. We're moving through it. And so when we see ourselves as just spirit moving through these experiences, we allow ourselves to flow, to just flow and be at peace and be at ease, be accepting of all that is. Jesus, in his spiritual wisdom, spoke from the very heights of spiritual perception. He was able to see the truth about every person, every situation. He didn't get stuck with sympathy and, oh, poor you. He saw the spiritual perspective, while at the same time, with deep humility, he responded to everyone with love and compassion. He came from his heart with love and compassion. He didn't try to tell them that wasn't happening to them or it wasn't real. He understood what was happening and he felt it. And he taught that we're divinity having a human experience and we're all going through it together. We're all brothers and sisters going through this. And no person ever lived who valued the human soul more than Jesus, because he realized that the human soul was simply the personification of God in action through that individual. So he valued that and loved that and honored that within all people. Sympathy and compassion are those ties that bind us close together in mutual understanding and in an attempt to uncover that divinity within ourselves and within each other. Sympathy, or perhaps we would prefer to call it empathy, is the most gentle of all human virtues, the kindest and most gentle of all human virtues, for it's the outpouring of divine givingness through people. We are the instruments of that divine givingness. And as we express compassion, love, and understanding, we are allowing that divine givingness of God to express through us. So how can we give this very high level of support to people? How can we support them at the human level while still remembering the spiritual truth about who they are, not getting caught up in the condition or the situation with sympathy, which only drags somebody down, but rather lifting up through empathy, through knowing the truth about them? Well, as I was studying and preparing for this talk, I reread a book that I've had for a while that I love very much. It's called How Can I Help? It's written by Ram Dass. Many of you have probably heard of Ram Dass. He was a teacher. He's still living, in fact, but he is not on the circuit, so to speak, anymore. But he has some powerful books out. The first one I ever read was Be Here Now. But this one, How Can I Help?, is a beautiful book written about compassion and how to help people going through different situations. Ram Dass says that we need to remember that we're all just walking each other home. We're just walking each other home. So we're all partners in this. We're just hooking arms and walking along together with love and compassion for each other. And he said the only way that we can do this is to release judgment. Because if we're holding judgment about what we are going through or what someone else is going through, then we're blocking that divine givingness, that loving compassion that could be expressing. So we do know that everything that goes around comes around, as we say in the South. So if we're giving love and compassion out in our own lives, it's going to come back into our heart and into our experience. So in this book, he tells the story of a younger man who's traveling in Japan. And I couldn't really tell. I read it a couple times trying to figure out. I couldn't really tell if he was talking about himself traveling through Japan or relaying a story from someone else. But here's how the story goes. I think you'll get what he was trying to convey. He said, the train rattled through the suburbs of Tokyo on a drowsy spring afternoon. The car that I was on was fairly empty. There were just a few housewives with kids in tow and an elderly couple who had been out shopping, and just a few other people scattered around. And at one station, the doors opened, and suddenly the afternoon's quiet was shattered by a man who stepped on bellowing violent curses in an incomprehensible way. He staggered into the car. He wore laborer's clothing, and he was big, dirty, and very drunk. Screaming, he swung at a woman holding a baby, and the blow sent her spinning into the laps of an elderly couple. Miraculously, the baby was unharmed. The terrified couple jumped up and scrambled toward the end of the car as the laborer aimed a kick at the back of the old woman, but missed as she scampered to safety. Enraged, the drunk man grabbed the pole, the metal pole in the center of the train, and tried to wrench it out of its place. I could see that his hands were cut and bleeding. I was young then, some 20 years ago, and I was in pretty good shape. I've been putting in a solid 8 hours of Aikido training nearly every day for the past 3 years. I like to throw and grapple, and I thought I was tough. The trouble was my martial arts skills were untested in actual combat. As students of Aikido, we were not allowed to fight. Aikido, my teacher said, is the art of reconciliation. Whoever has the mind to fight has lost the connection with the universe. If you try to dominate people, you're already defeated. We study how to resolve conflict, not how to start it. I listened to my teacher's words once again in my head. I felt both tough and holy. In my heart, however, I wanted an absolutely legitimate opportunity whereby I might save the innocent by destroying the guilty. This is it, I said to myself as I got to my feet. People are in danger. If I don't do something fast, somebody will probably get hurt. Seeing me stand up, the drunk recognized a chance to focus his rage. Aha, he roared, a foreigner. You need a lesson in Japanese manners. I held on lightly to the commuter strap above me and gave a slow look of disgust and dismissal. I planned to take this turkey apart, but he had to make the first move. All right, he hollered, you're gonna get a lesson. And he gathered himself up for a rush at me. Just that instant, in a fraction of a second, someone shouted, hey! It was earth-shattering. I wheeled to my left, and the drunk spun to his right, and we both stared down at a little Japanese man. He must have been way up into his 70s, this tiny gentleman, standing there in his immaculate kimono. He took no notice of me, but beamed delightedly at the laborer, as though he had the most important secret to share. Come here, the old man said, beckoning to the drunk. Come here and talk with me, he said, waving his hand lightly. The big man followed as if on a string, and he planted his feet belligerently in front of the old gentleman and roared, why the hell should I talk to you? The drunk now had his back to me. If his elbow moved so much as a millimeter, I'd drop him to his socks. The old man continued to beam at the laborer. What you been drinking, he asked, his eyes sparkling with interest. I been drinking sake, the laborer bellowed back, and it's none of your business. Oh, that's wonderful, the old man said, absolutely wonderful. You see, I love sake too. Every night my wife and I, she's 76, you know, we warm up a little bottle of sake and take it out into the garden, and we sit on our old wooden bench. We watch the sun go down, and we look to see how our persimmon tree is doing. My great-grandfather planted that tree, and we worry about whether it's going to recover from the ice storms that we had last winter. Our tree's done better than I expected, considering the poor quality of the soil. It's gratifying to watch the tree when we take our sake and go out and sit there in the evening, even if it rains. He looked up at the laborer. His eyes were twinkling. As he struggled to follow the old man's conversation, the drunk's face began to soften. His fists slowly unclenched. Yeah, he said, I love persimmons too. His voice trailed off. Yes, the old man said, smiling, and I'm sure you have a wonderful wife. No, replied the laborer, my wife died. Very gently, swaying with the motion of the train, the big man began to sob. I don't got no wife. I don't got no home. I don't got no job. I am so ashamed of myself. Tears rolled down his cheeks. A spasm of despair rippled through his body. Now it was my turn. Standing there in my well-scrubbed youthful innocence, my make this world safe for democracy righteousness, I suddenly felt dirtier than he was. Then the train arrived at my stop. As the doors opened, I heard the old man cluck sympathetically. My, he said, that's a difficult predicament indeed. Sit down here and tell me about it. I turned my head for one last look to see the laborer sprawled on the seat, his head in the old man's lap. The old man was softly stroking the filthy, matted hair. As the train pulled away, I sat down on a bench. What I had wanted to do with muscle had been accomplished with kind words. I had just seen Aikido tried in combat, and the essence of it was love. I would have to practice the art with an entirely different spirit. It would be a long time before I could speak about the resolution of conflict. So, here we have an example of both resistance and acceptance, and the difference that it made in that experience. So accepting what is moves us through resistance into a new place. Aikido is a way of non-resistance, which is so much more powerful than fighting something head-on with either words or with muscle. Acceptance allows it to just flow by. Just flow by. You just move out of the way and it just flows by. The very lack of compassion we feel for others is a lack of compassion that we feel for ourselves. Accepting what is our human experience. Our teaching is love and law. That's what we teach. We teach that it's done unto you as you believe, that you create your own reality. Because we know that if people would simply change their thinking, it would change their life experience. But this is a very challenging and brutal response to someone in the midst of a serious situation, a serious crisis. It completely changes our response when we remember that just like us, others forget, or maybe never knew, the truth of who they really are. And in that moment, what they need is not law, what they need is love. What they need is compassion, kindness, caring. This allows us and others to accept what is at the moment being presented in compassion and love. We don't have to stay stuck in the experience. It too shall pass, and we can create a new tomorrow. And also accepting what the spiritual reality is. While our human condition is a real human condition, it's not the spiritual reality. Ultimately, we have to make sure that our accepting what isn't just settling for this is the way it's always going to be. That's not the intention at all. That's just the acknowledgement that this is what it is right now, but I'm moving through this and creating something better. We must grow to accept that what is really true is the spiritual reality, and that's what we really need to accept in our heart. Our movement forward through the difficulty is supported by deep belief and faith that this will pass, whatever it is, as all human conditions do, and that the spiritual truth and reality will once again assert itself. So don't be afraid to show compassion to yourself, to others, to feel your feelings, to allow yourself and others to experience what the human experience is in the moment. People do get sick. People do get hurt. People do die. People experience loss. They experience aging. People experience a lot of pain in their lives. And they need our love and our compassion. They don't need our lecturing. They don't need our profound wisdom in those moments. They need our heartfelt love and compassion. We need our love and compassion to grow also. For here's the paradox. As we let our love and compassion grow for the human condition, it also grows exponentially for the spiritual truth of who we truly are. So we're balancing it all out. As we acknowledge and accept the human condition, we're also raising our awareness of the spiritual condition by the love and the givingness that's flowing forth through us and from us. So the affirmation is, I accept my and others' humanity with compassion. I accept our spiritual truth with conviction and faith. Let's read that together. I accept my and others' humanity with compassion. I accept our spiritual truth with conviction and faith. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you.